Viking superhero, change to Viking superhero. Aham, ding and reel, swing and shield, bling and superhero. They're the latest, they're the greatest, ultimate superhero. The Marvel superheroes have arrived!
Hey there, and welcome to Marvel by the Month. My name's Brian Stratton.
And I am Rob Milne.
And we're very excited to have you back here for yet another episode of Marvel by the Month. This week, we're going to be talking about all of the comics that came out published by Marvel with a March 1964 release date. That means they hit the stands around January 1964. There's a pretty good list of stuff in here. We got 9 issues to get through. But before we start talking about comics, we have a very special guest in the studio.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Noah Campbell has returned to the mic.
Hello again.
Thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah.
For doing this thing once more.
You aren't the first guest to come twice. Levi has done that, but you are our second repeat guest.
Yeah.
Silver.
He's a silver medal.
Yep. You're almost as good as Levi.
Or double bronze. Double bronze.
Almost as good as Levi's cool, though.
Yeah. No, that's pretty all right. So, it's been... In Marvel time, it's been like 12 to 18 months since last you were on here. Before we jump into the stuff, what were your initial impressions of what we had you read this month?
A mixed bag. I liked it. Not all this art was Jack Kirby this time, so I was a little disappointed. And it was a lot of comics to read, 9 comics. And since I procrastinated, I read 9 comics in about one day. So
nice.
I can't remember which is which until we open up the covers. So,
well, we're very excited to have your unique insights into everything that Marvel is publishing this month.
That's such a true thing.
Yes.
It's for a treat.
But before we start talking about comics, we got to talk about what was going on in January 1964 when these were all hitting the stands. So, Rob, you want to lead us off with a little bit of Beatles knowledge?
Sure. The Beatles by the month. On the 3rd of January, we had millions of Americans heard the Beatles' new song, She Loves You, on the Jack Parr program. On January 10th, Introducing the Beatles was released by VJ Records in advance of Capitol Records' January 20th release of Meet the Beatles, which was the... American version of With the Beatles that we talked about last time. So Introducing the Beatles is not a real Beatles record. So Capitol obtained a restraining order against VJ on January 16th, but VJ would defy the order by releasing the album again on February 10th. So it spent 9 weeks as the second most popular selling album behind Capitol's number one seller. So they were like, you know, we'll just pay for this lawsuit with this bootleg version of the second Beatles album.
That's wild.
So Meet the Beatles was a pretty big deal. Very different than With the Beatles. It had less covers. So the Americans had a lot more of original music from the Beatles. Also in January, the Beatles started working on A Hard Day's Night. So both the film came a little later, but they were working on the album starting in January.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, it falls to me then to give the update on the civil rights struggle in America, which these are almost never good news. But this one, at least we do have like signs of progress, sort of. So on the 4th of January, 1964, Harold A. Franklin became the first African-American student to be enrolled at Auburn University in Alabama. 3 United States Marshals were parked across the street to protect him from violence and intimidation by the crowd, which included 100 Alabama state policemen. They were not on the side of protecting one of their citizens.
I was just doing that.
Racist
calculus. Yeah.
Yeah. Not great. again, sort of a good news, bad news situation. On the 23rd of January, 1964, the South Dakota Senate voted unanimously to ratify the 24th Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibiting the use of poll taxes in elections for federal office. That made South Dakota the 38th of the 50 states to approve the amendment, which meant it went into effect because you have to have 3/4 of the states ratify a constitutional amendment for it to become an active amendment. So South Dakota was number 38. Four more states ratified it after it became effective. Virginia finally ratified it in 1977.
Bold.
North Carolina got around to it in 1989.
Bolder.
Alabama took care of it in 2002, and Texas finally decided that it was okay to not have poll taxes in 2009.
Oh, way to go, Texas.
I thought Texas hated Texas.
Yeah. Well, they hate Texas for certain people. And now I think we should take a moment and let's drag the states that never approved the 24th Amendment, which include Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, which rejected it in 1962, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Wyoming.
Wow.
Yeah.
The
Hateful Eight.
Yeah, I knew I didn't like them for a reason. Yeah. I mean, I've had some good times in Louisiana, but that's about it.
Right.
Well, you know, in different news and important news.
Yeah.
Especially if you like the film Mandy. January 7, 1964, Nicolas Cage was born in Long Beach, California. Mm. Bum, bum, bum.
Shout out to Nick Cage and Long Beach.
Right. And I'm sure he listens to the podcast every Wednesday.
Wouldn't it be great if he did? I'd be so excited to have Nick Cage as a guest on this thing.
That would be awesome.
January 8th, 1964, in his first State of the Union address, President Johnson announced the war on poverty. He said, "Let us work together to make this year's session the best in the nation's history, as the session which declared all-out war on human poverty and unemployment in these United States. This administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America."
That settled it.
Yep.
No problems after that.
War on poor people, we still do it.
No. It's a different thing. Oh, right. That one's going a lot better.
Yeah.
I thought we were winning that war.
Yeah, somebody's winning the war on poor people.
Yeah.
And it's not us. Mm-mm. So January 9th, 1964, a 17-year-old student at Balboa High School in the U.S.-controlled Panama Canal Zone raised the American flag outside the school building in defiance of the zone governor's order that no flags be raised at schools until the Panamanian flag could be flown alongside. 200 high school students and four teachers at the Instituto Nacional in Panama City marched peacefully to Balboa High School, where six students were allowed to carry a Panamanian flag to Balboa High. A confrontation followed, damaging the Instituto's flag. That evening, over 3,000 Panamanians tried to force their way into the canal zone, which led to rioting. By the time the violence subsided 4 days later, 21 Panamanians and four American soldiers were dead, and 465 Panamanians and 103 Americans were injured or wounded. The American student who had organized the flag raising would later say that his only regret was the deaths of the four American soldiers. January 9 is now observed as a public holiday in Panama known as Martyrs Day.
Right.
Dia de los Martyrs. Yep. I don't know how to say that. I'm learning Spanish, but I don't know how to say martyrs.
I was going to say, your pronunciation was much stronger than mine would have been. I took 5 years of French in school because I grew up like an hour and a half from Quebec. And yeah. I thought, well, this is perfect. Like, why would you learn Spanish when French Canada is right there? And I'm never going to leave Vermont.
You mean Vermont?
Vermont. Right. January 11th, 1964, for the first time, the United States Surgeon General acknowledged that smoking could be hazardous to one's health.
Could be.
Could be.
Yeah.
A 387-page report prepared by 11 scientists unanimously concluded that, quote, average smokers had a 9 to 10-fold risk of developing lung cancer compared to non-smokers, and heavy smokers had at least a 20-fold risk. At the time, the average American smoked 12 cigarettes a day.
Wow. That's the average American.
Yeah.
I have some of the above average Americans in my family. So on the 22nd of January, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff sent a classified memo to U.S. Defense Secretary Robert S. McNamara, urging an expansion of U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War, advocating heavy bombing of North Vietnam and deployment of troops in South Vietnam for an eventual invasion of the North.
Yeah. So Vietnam's going well.
Yeah. Still going great.
Yeah.
On the 30th, South Vietnam's General Nguyen Khan led a bloodless military coup to replace Duan Van Minh as president. Khan allowed Duan Van Minh to resume the office of president 9 days later and named himself prime minister.
Yep. It's just going great.
Yeah, this has not gone well and continues to not go well.
Yeah, it gets worse before it gets better. On the 27th of January, Republican Senator Margaret Chase Smith of Maine announced her candidacy for the Republican presidential nomination, becoming, quote, the first woman to be taken seriously for the White House, unquote, according to the Chicago Tribune. She would compete in the New Hampshire and Illinois primaries before dropping out of the campaign.
So she didn't win.
She didn't.
She
win.
Did not win. No.
Sorry, man.
President Smith never took office.
And one of my favorite movies, on the 29th of January 1964, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, debuted in select U.S. movie theaters.
Good timing.
Yeah. And I can't believe I thought that it was made in black and white later to, you know, sort of point out the ironies and the insanity of what was happening. But really, it was made exactly as we were getting heavily involved in Vietnam.
Yep.
And, you know, all of the other communist affairs.
All right. So that's what's going on in January 1964. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do my new favorite segment of the podcast. So please don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back to Marvel by the Month, and now it is time for my favorite segment of the podcast, our second episode doing this. Each episode of the podcast, we cover three issues in detail. Everything else winds up in this segment, which we're calling Marvel by the Minute. I will introduce each issue, I will put 60 seconds on the clock, and that's how long we have to hit all of the high points in the issue. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Oh, God. I'm not, but it will go by really fast.
Okay.
Yep.
We'll go ahead and
chime in, anybody.
Yeah. We'll start off with a softball here. Fantastic Four, number 24. The story is called The Infant Terrible, written by Stan Lee with art by Jack Kirby, inked by George Bell. This one has the Fantastic Four versus the Infant Terrible. We got 60 seconds on the clock and go.
Okay, we start with the Fantastic Four getting interviewed by Time Magazine. They're taking a bunch of pictures. Everybody's hamming it up. They're trying to take a bunch of pictures of Sue, who is half invisible most of the time, so that's ironic. Then they hear about something weird happening at Times Square. They all run over there, and a whole bunch of weird things are occurring, like lampposts turning into like a plant with berries, and a whole army appears. The Thing tries to fight them. It just makes more... all the just super bizarre things just keep happening. They can't figure out how to stop it. Then they find out that there is some kind of alien that's causing it. They can't stop it. Some like petty criminals get the alien, and they figure out it might be a kid. So they trick it into getting some, an armored car for it. They actually, starts just making the money that they're getting into like mud as a joke. So Reed figures out eventually that it is a kid, and their parents have to come get it.
Nicely done.
Wow,
that's professional quality right there.
God. Oh, it's, I feel like just sweat shoots out of me the minute we start doing this.
You've only got five more of these to go. You're doing great.
Hang on.
Tales of Suspense, number 51.
Okay, let me get prepared.
Tales of Suspense, number 51. This story is called The Sinister Scarecrow. It's written by Stan Lee with artwork by Don Heck. And this features Iron Man versus the Scarecrow in his very first appearance. All right. Let me know when you are ready.
As Chime ready in as whenever you want, Noah.
All
I'm
right.
Just going to keep talking fast until it happens.
We got 60 seconds on the clock and go.
All right. We have Iron Man sees a criminal robbing a ticket stand. He goes into the show to capture the criminal, where a contortionist actually jumps out and an escape artist who captures him. And Iron Man's like, good job, man. If you ever were a criminal, that would be tough. So he becomes a criminal. It's Marvel Comics. So then
first thing he steals some crows.
And he steals some crows from somebody else. He steals an outfit of a scarecrow and becomes the Scarecrow.
Can you really steal an outfit of a scarecrow? I mean, that's usually just something that someone has thrown away, right?
No, it's like he's floppy, so it makes sense right. somehow.
He has a rationale, but we don't have enough time to talk about it.
We get to see Happy's weird cauliflower ears again. We have and Happy actually tries to fight him. Iron Man gets foiled by the crows. And eventually
Scarecrow tries to sell some secrets to Cuba.
Yep, as usual. Yeah, yep. Getting some, and he gets some.
I think Iron Man overreacts. He sinks the Cuban boat.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Nice.
Perfect.
Very, very nicely done, gentlemen. All right. Next up, we have Journey into Mystery number 102.
Oh man.
Now there's two stories in this one, which is going to make this twice as much fun. The first story is Slave of Zarko, the Tomorrow Man, which was written by Stan Lee with art by Jack Kirby, inked by Chick Stone. Now, if you remember, this is part two of a two-part story. In the last issue, Odin reduced Thor's power by half. Loki restored the Tomorrow Man's memory, and the Tomorrow Man forced Thor to agree to help him conquer the 23rd century. And then we also have the backup story, Tales of Asgard, Death Comes to Thor. Which was written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby, inked by Paul Reinman. This has the first appearances of Hel and Sif, and young Thor gets Mjolnir.
So, he gets Mjolnir off the ground.
Yeah, he does.
There, I summarized that part.
Yeah, okay, cool. And we didn't even have the clock going yet.
I just wanted to mention one thing about the... I didn't read the last one.
Right.
But I noticed that they took his... half of his invincible power.
Yeah.
Half... of an invincible power, what does that leave?
He's like 50% invincible now.
It's 50% vincible, 50% invincible.
All right. 60 seconds on the clock and go.
Okay, thanks for the synopsis that got us four pages in. So now we're in the 23rd century. Zarko is having Thor just mess things up so that he can threaten everyone and take over. Thor ends up fighting a bunch of bizarre things. There's some things that seem like plot things from the Matrix trilogy where the master robot needs to allow the Tomorrow Man to take control. But Thor has sort of outsmarted him because he can still use his hammer even at 50% invincible. Then we get to Tales of Asgard. Death comes to Thor. So this is young Thor, and it's the first time Thor actually gets the hammer off the ground, and he's going to sacrifice his own self to get Sif out of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes him far more nobler and helps him be totally worthy.
Yeah.
I've got extra time.
You got extra
there's
time.
There's a giant robot octopus in this one that you just glossed right over.
I did. It's my favorite thing, but it is another thing like the Matrix trilogy. It's like the squids from the Matrix. It's pretty much where they got that thing.
You're right. You're right.
It's also my panel of the month. So I was like,
Nice. Well, spoiler alert.
Squid.
Sorry, Barb.
Panel of the month. I didn't know about this.
Okay.
Oh, God. It's still happening.
We're halfway through, Rob.
It's still happening.
You're halfway through.
I did better than last time.
Yeah.
It still sucks, but here we go.
So last time you only had to do three. So this is a dramatic step up for you. We're going to be talking about, we're going to spend 60 seconds on Sergeant Fury number 6 now. This issue is called The Fangs of the Desert Fox, written by Stan Lee with art by Jack Kirby, inked by George Bell. It's the Howling Commandos versus Erwin Rommel's Africa Corps.
Okay.
60 seconds are on the clock.
I got this.
And go.
Okay. Nick Fury, it gets sent to go fight Rommel in the desert in Africa. Dino gets hurt in a previous mission. So they get this guy named Stonewell. Stonewell, it proves to be a pretty big bigot right out of the gate. And they're all like, well, we're kind of stuck with him because we got to go on this mission. He won't bunk with Jones. He won't, he doesn't like anybody other than the guy from the South.
Yeah.
Reb. So
a little on the nose,
but they end up fighting together. He does represent well when he's fighting, and he is saved by Izzy Cohen. He is, and then he has a blood transfusion save him from Gabriel Jones. So
yes. Jew, I think. Yeah.
So he's saved both by the Jewish person and then the black guy gives him a blood transfusion. So yeah. He walks away still saying he's a bigot, but he leaves a little note behind to say that he was,
leaves his phone number or his address. He doesn't even say I'm not a bigot, but they all give him kudos for it. I was like, he wasn't so bad after all.
Well, you know, the bar was so low.
And he does. 1964. His redeeming quality too is he has an opportunity to join the Nazis at one point in this comic, and he's like, "No way!" But he still hates Jews.
Yep.
So he's a little.
I'm an American anti-Semite.
I'm just a white man from the '60s. An American.
Okay, where we go. Tales to Astonish, featuring Noah's favorite superhero, Giant/Ant-Man. This one is called Trapped by the Porcupine, written by Stan Lee with art by Dick Ayers. It's Giant Man and the Wasp versus the Porcupine in his dramatic return.
Porcupine. While you're waiting, let's talk about this first panel. It's really ridiculous. Are they doing stunts? Is that what's happening? He's his hands are on one building, his feet are on another building, and the Wasp is dancing on his back, and he's complaining that her shoes are too pointed and they hurt his back while he's doing this stunt. But I want to say, like, something happened where I was like, what is the scale of these? The scales are not always
super accurate.
And there's a lot of showing off in these comics. Fantastic Four particularly.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny's a big... A
lot of showboating.
Same with Ben Grimm, yeah.
All right, I'm gonna hit start on this timer here. You got 60 seconds.
Yeah, we did burn some time.
All right, go for it.
Basically, we have the return of the Porcupine. Noah hasn't really seen this glorious supervillain before, but it's a guy covered in quills that all have, like, special quill things in them, and wears sort of a green gas mask. He sneaks in to mess with Giant Man by joining a fan club for Giant Man or Ant-Man or whatever, and just dresses as the Porcupine with a bunch of kids dressed in crappy costumes as, like, the Human Top.
Yeah, so he's a grown adult in the actual Porcupine suit.
Yeah, yeah. And in which Giant Man muses looks really good, you know, compared to those kids, and doesn't seem to notice that he has a grown man's voice. So the Porcupine gasses everyone
repeatedly.
Yes. And all these kids. And then Giant Man, I can't even remember. He, you know, swings around and does some clumsy things.
Porcupine takes a bunch of shrinking pills and shrinks into nothingness.
Oh, nice. Classic Doom.
All right. Last issue to cover, Strange Tales 118. How are we doing, guys?
Really good. I feel like we've covered these really, really well.
Yeah. In-depth coverage. We might come back to talk about some of these hilarious things.
Rob's doing a better job than I thought he would.
Yeah. I'm doing a better job than I thought I would.
I'm not saying you're doing a good job.
But, I know. Yeah. I've set the bar low previously.
What are we on here?
Okay. We got Strange Tales 118. So this has two stories in it. The Man Who Became the Torch, written by Stan Lee with art by Dick Ayers. It's another Human Torch versus the Wizard story. And then the backup story is The Possessed, written by Stan Lee with art by Steve Ditko. It's Doctor Strange versus The Possessed.
Which is a band, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have 60 seconds on the clock and go.
Johnny Storm is a show off jerk. He's showing off. He gets the wizard gets out of jail. He makes an anti-gravity device out of scrap metal
that he found. And also made a poisonous gas that he made with scraps. Yeah, that he found
just,
on the prison.
He just did it at prison and then escapes. So then he lures Johnny in by having him do a bunch of feats of strength in front of a camera. Johnny wears out his flame power, then gets stuck in a giant a pack of cigarettes that's an ad in Times Square or something.
Asbestos plays into this one. He's locked in an asbestos.
Oh, as room. Always.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
The Fantastic Four end up trying to help him out, and then he rushes off to go get the wizard by himself. The wizard ends up going high in the sky with his own anti-gravity device and disappears. Then we get to the dispossessed. Doctor Strange goes to a weird village in Bavaria where everyone's starting to act weird. They are possessed by people, not aliens, but creatures from another dimension that look like aliens. God. Dang it.
That was really pretty good.
I had to cut myself short and jump over to Doctor Strange. So I didn't, you know, last time I think I just yelled Tales of Asgard at the end of the Journey into Mystery. One.
Right, right.
Wow.
Well, very nicely done. That's still my favorite part of the podcast. you did a fantastic job of getting through 2/3 of the issues we're talking about this week. But that still means we've got 3 to go deep on. So what do you think? Should we take a break and then come back and we'll talk about a little bit of Amazing Spider-Man.
All right.
So stay tuned. All right, welcome back to Marvel by the Month. We're going to talk about Spider-Man, specifically Amazing Spider-Man number 10. The story is called The Enforcers. It's written by Stan Lee with art by Steve Ditko. I will just lead us off and then, gentlemen, jump in with your observations and such. So the big man has formed a group called The Enforcers to take over the other gangs in New York and launch a crime wave. And who are these enforcers? Well, you got Fancy Dan, who's a little guy who knows judo. You've got Ox, who's a big, dumb, strong guy. And you've got Montana. He's good with a lasso.
I feel like they took a really long time coming up with the enforcers names and powers.
Yeah, it's
I liked them.
And
I like Fancy Dan.
Fancy Dan's a great name.
I also feel like the big man is really the story, but they decided the big man wasn't the best thing to call it for some reason.
Right, so. Right. Yeah.
But I would if it was called Fancy Dan, you know, it's my job to read these things. So I would read it.
Exactly. This kind of reminds me also of the Fantastic Four story we read last week where like Dr. Doom just got like three rando guys to be his gang to go like go after the Fantastic Four. So
enhance their powers. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the big man, he's got these three guys to be his enforcers and he's planning on taking over all the crime in New York and put all the other gangs out of business or bring them under him.
Yeah. So he basically embarrasses Spider-Man. He sets up a trap to embarrass Spider-Man, humiliate him. Right. And then everyone's like, oh, this guy beat Spider-Man. Maybe we should listen, but probably
not. Well, everybody did what they do in the last time I was here. I was complaining about it where it's like, these guys are now like Spider-Man's like a renowned guy. Like he's done all this killer shit for the city and everybody loves him, but he makes one tiny mistake and everybody on the ground is like, what do they say about
he
him?
He sure
here?
Goofed
like,
that one.
Yeah. They're That's like, one they bag on him super hard. It's like, I can't have one. Like if a cop slips up and gets killed, everybody's like, oh no, you know, but this guy, he's like flying all through the sky and saving everybody's ass all the time. And then I mean, this is almost an excusable blunder, even though Spider-Man is pretty hard on himself in this.
Oh, he always is. Yeah.
Yeah. I get mad how fickle. Because
he's just
are.
Entertainment for them.
Yeah. New York is a tough town, dude. Yeah, it's like it's very unforgiving. Very little margin of error there.
Yeah. And, he's just a big clown, they say about Spider-Man. they can't wait to just be cruel
and take him down. Yeah. Yep. It's like J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah. Meantime, which is a word that they say a lot in the comics thus far, but they do eventually say meanwhile in a comic we'll go over later. But meanwhile, or meantime, Aunt May is still in the hospital and she needs a blood transfusion from Peter. He's worried that his, you know, radioactive blood will do more harm than good. And it rightfully so, but he also is trying to not look like a total coward or jerk. And
well, they guilt him bad.
Yeah. And he also may be the only person who could give blood to her.
Right.
So, you know, he does.
So he does it. And then, after giving his blood, he, heads out as Spider-Man, to bust up some of the big man's small time crooks. As he's doing this, J. Jonah Jameson, is on the scene. He demands that the police arrest Spider-Man as well as the crooks, because he thinks Spidey must be the big man, which is something that he basically did in last month's Spider-Man, where he was convinced that Spider-Man was Electro and he printed that in the Daily Bugle.
And before that, Spider-Man was the Lizard.
Right.
You know,
right.
Spider-Man is every villain that pops up for JJ.
Yeah. But JJ doesn't ever learn his lesson. So just like the previous issue, he prints the accusation in the paper. one of his reporters, Frederick Foswell, does try to talk him out of it, but Jonah's just not having it. And Foswell's like, well, I love my job.
What he says.
Like, I like the money that comes with having a job. And so he just does what Jonah asks him to do. And that's that.
But then Betty Betty Brant gets accosted by the enforcers who are collecting interest on a loan that she already paid off, but they're like, too bad.
Yeah.
Peter sees this and lets himself get roughed up because he can't reveal he's Spider-Man. And Betty still won't tell him what's going on. We already got a hint that Betty had some terrible secret in the last issue. So,
yes.
And, you know, these guys are really hitting it off. They're going to be a couple.
Mm-hmm. But we hope.
Yep. But yeah, so so that just doesn't work. And as Spider-Man, Peter goes and captures a crook working for the big man that sort of pointed out the enforcers. He scares the bejesus out of him with a giant fake spider that he makes out of webbing, which yeah, is
it's like webbing and like plywood. And plywood. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I think it said something like a few minutes later, and I'm like, he didn't whip that thing up. He's like, that's like stagecraft there.
He made it like a while ago thinking, I'll have a use for this someday.
It says minutes later after the blindfold has been removed, and then it's Spider-Man in a giant web holding the criminal in a giant web with a full web spider.
Yeah.
Like,
they can't hold your hand through this entire comic. You got to just use your imagination.
I just have you probably had to make a giant prop out of paper mache or something. It's not easy.
I do it in minutes.
I also love the way that like in this scene, Spider-Man is just one of the very few times he just really leans into the spider part of his personality.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing.
There's a darkness to this.
Maybe
thing
he's not well known enough yet that he can play on that. Like,
right.
Later,
right.
It's like, what is the spider?
Like, they'd be like, this is not believable.
Yeah.
Like, black suit Spider-Man, maybe.
Right.
But not the jaunty blue and red.
Yeah. Yeah. The giant fake spider has its desired effect. The crook coughs up the location of the hideout.
Instantly.
Yeah. He's terrified. And then so Spidey heads out to go deal with the enforcers. He gets lassoed by Montana and pulled down. And then it's Spider-Man versus the enforcers. And he does a pretty good job of holding his own, despite the fact that he's also pretty worn out from giving all that blood to Aunt May.
Yeah, I can't.
Doctor says he should rest for a few days after he gave blood. Well, how much blood did he
give? How much you got?
A lot of blood. And it's funny because then it's like, it's almost like the classic Johnny Storm's powers are too low. It's like, you know, Spider-Man, but it's something you can relate to because it's Spider-Man. So he gave blood and he is weak.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, and that's the thing is like Peter Parker is kind of a weedy little dude. So you could understand how a doctor would be like, why did you just take the rest of your life off?
If that dude gives a pint of blood, you should just eat cookies for 4 days and try to get it back, man. Yeah, but Spidey does see Jonah on the scene and wonders if he is the big man. So we have this weird thing where Spidey is starting to think that maybe Jonah is the supervillain.
Yeah.
Instead of Jonah just assuming every time that Spider-Man is the villain.
I mean, it would explain why Jonah is just a jerk all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he is the villain, but, you know, not in the supervillain kind of way.
Yeah, you don't realize until you're more of a grown-up that J. Jonah Jameson really is the villain of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it's like fake news is the villain of the Marvel universe and our universe.
Yep.
Pete then tries to later get a hold of Betty, but she doesn't answer her phone and has suddenly quit her job at the Bugle. So she's just like, he knows about this weird thing with the enforcers and this loan and suspects something, so I'm out, and disappears.
We jump to the next day where Peter is at school. And he has come up with an idea to track down the enforcers, where as Peter Parker, he starts bragging to anyone who will listen that he knows who the big man is. Flash Thompson, his rival at school, actually pulls him aside and says, "What are you doing? Keep your mouth shut. They're going to kill you." And Peter's like, "Oh, no, this is basically exactly what I'm hoping for."
Right.
As desired, the enforcers show up, they kidnap Peter, and they haul him off to their lair. When no one's looking, and he's all by himself, Peter changes into Spider-Man. And then he starts fighting the enforcers once again, and has a pretty good showing of himself. The big man's there, assorted other crooks are there. And he is just going through these guys, and he's constantly moving. They can't lay a glove on him.
Yeah, I forgot about his blood transfusion for several panels. And I was like, oh, it's just Spider-Man, like, cracking wise and beating up 20 guys.
Yeah. That almost was a perfect couplet.
Cracking wise. But I don't have what it takes. And he... Basically, he doesn't quite take them all down, but he takes the enforcers down, but the big man gets away.
Yeah.
And then Peter goes back to Jameson, totally convinced that he's the big man. And he goes to the Bugle to confront him, and the police bust in and arrest Frederick Foswell, the only other guy we've met in the story. And they like, you got giant like platform shoes in your car. You're the big man. And it turns out he's the big man. So yeah. He just sat around writing dumb articles for the Bugle while he was running a huge crime syndicate.
Yep.
Weird.
Yeah. That's a multitasker right
what
there.
What a twist.
Yeah. Noah, did you see that twist coming?
I did.
I want to say the first time I read the story, I don't think I did. But then again, the first time I read the story, I think I was 11. So, you know. I didn't understand that if you're, you know, suddenly introduced to two characters and you don't know who one of them is, it's the other one.
Although in Marvel's defense, often that person just gets away and never has anything to do with any of the story. So that's like a Lieber move to actually tie it up
it's hard to have a red herring when it's the only person.
I know, but like, they would not even bother to reveal the identity.
It's a person you haven't even seen yet.
And they will tell you in 4 or 5 months, you know? So the fact that they wrapped it up and revealed who it was, solved the mystery, was something I didn't expect that they were going to tell us who the big man was.
Yeah.
But also this thing wraps up with Jonah alone in his office revealing why he hates Spider-Man so much.
Yeah. And I'm just going to read what Jonah says all by himself. All my life, I've been interested in only one thing, making money.
Yeah, this is awesome.
And yet Spider-Man risks his life day after day with no thought of reward. If a man like him is a hero, then what am I? I can never respect myself while he lives. Spider-Man represents everything that I'm not. He's brave, powerful, and unselfish. The truth is, I envy him. I, J. Jonah Jameson, millionaire, man of the world, civic leader, I'd give everything I own to be the man that he is. But I could never climb to his level. So all that remains for me is to try to tear him down because, heaven help me, I'm jealous of him.
It's so he's also perfect. Saying this out loud.
Yeah.
Like a total psycho.
It's very Shakespearean, like the soliloquy.
I appreciate that he recognizes, at least. I mean, that he's like, I'm just a piece of crap. But I feel
that
like
is gives, it's better than some rich people who get jealous and then decide to try to climb to the very top of American, you know, politics and in order to just make themselves feel better and take down somebody better than them.
Yes.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
That's
all
good,
I could think of as I read it.
My favorite thing about these comics is just how much stuff people say out loud. There is a bunch of panels where Spider-Man is thinking to these,
which is new because sometimes he's thinking while he's just in an alley,
and also
and he's thinking out loud.
I'd say about a third of this comic is Spider-Man fist fighting a bunch of guys.
Yeah,
he's like, and this fight gets pretty wacky too. They're like throwing oil on a greased, like a make an oily greased floor to try to make Batman slip or Batman Spider-Man. He really
rolls with it. He literally skates with it. And Spider-Man does awesome feats in this.
Yeah, they throw barrels at him. He just rides around on top of them like a circus monkey. They throw a bunch of tires at him and he dives through the tires. Like he's kind of like showing off, I think.
Blood transfusion or no blood transfusion.
Yeah. Can you imagine how much better he would have fought if he had all of his blood?
I guess it would have been a short comic.
Yeah. It'd be like, knock the mask off the big man. Oh, it's that guy from the Bugle. Oh,
yep.
Man, all right. Over. Well, yeah. But we do end with Betty and still not returning Peter's calls. She's in Pennsylvania, just hiding out and wishing that she could somehow, get Spider-Man's help.
Yeah.
And tell Peter, you know, what was going on, but she can't.
Yeah. And that's how desperate things have gotten for Betty. She's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's voluntarily.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah.
A little blue at the end there.
Well, that's Amazing Spider-Man number 10. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some X-Men. Back to Marvel by the Month. It's time to talk about X-Men number 4, featuring the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. A story written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby, and inked by Paul Reinman. And we start out, the X-Men are celebrating their first year of classes at Professor Xavier's school, and they're celebrating X-Men style, which means they're bouncing around the danger room and putting their lives on the line during a training session as usual.
Pretty harsh too. Like the danger room is seriously like the danger of certain death all the time.
Yeah.
They don't mess around in training.
Well, I mean, I see flames, but those look like Nerf, like pugil sticks there that are flying out. I don't know how dangerous those are.
Well, if you get to like the Iceman over like the barbecue of fire.
Okay. All right.
And there's some pretty heavy stuff.
It does kind of look like American Ninja Warrior until they start throwing like giant weights,
the 75 pound weight.
Yeah.
And that's like Xavier saying like, hey Beast, throw this at your buddy, and yeah. He's like, okay,
yeah, throw this directly at his head when he's not looking. Okay. The training session ends with Marvel Girl using her powers to remove the lid from a box and lift out the contents. It's a cake.
She does pin the Iceman to the ceiling first, so yeah. It's a little cooler.
That is good.
But then, yeah, she opens a box.
Yep, and then Cyclops cuts the cake with his laser eyes.
Meanwhile, we meet four other mutants gathered around a table. This is Magneto's new Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. That includes Scarlet Witch.
Right.
So two of them are legitimately evil. The Toad, grotesque little bouncing guy, utterly dedicated to Magneto. He's actually a toady.
Yes.
Which is, it fits.
Yep.
Mastermind, who I could not remember when I was talking about the members of the Brotherhood.
That's one of his powers.
Yeah, he made me forget. He's a mutant illusionist who's basically the Miracle Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta think, like, every time one of these guys shows up who has, like, the power to do crazy illusions, like, the Miracle Man is just like hanging around at home waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
And he's like, what, did you lose my number?
Yep.
It's like, I was in the third issue of Fantastic Four.
They're like, yeah, we'll find somebody else who has the same power. We don't really need you to come back, man.
We'll just create a character who's exactly you and not use you.
And the last two are, this is a big debut. These are, this is Quicksilver, the hot tempered super speedster with white hair, and Scarlet Witch, who has the power to throw hexes and, you know, sort of affect probability.
Yeah.
And even weirder stuff. But so these two, you know, you might know from the popular cultures, from the movies. And they're only there because they're indebted to Magneto for saving them from a mob of torch carrying townspeople in their Eastern European home village. So
yeah.
He saved them, so they help him.
Yep.
But we can already tell that they're not as evil as the other Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Right, right. Yeah. One of them is not actually part of a brotherhood, and neither of them is down with the evil part of the name. So Magneto's got a team now to take on the X-Men with. And, you know, for the last several issues, Professor Xavier has been telling the X-Men that there are evil mutants out there, and this is the first time we really see them. So they exist. It was not just paranoia. Talking of the evil things that they do, Magneto steals an old freighter, and he uses it to transport his Brotherhood of Evil Mutants to the small South American nation of Santo Marco.
This is also the debut of Santo Marco, which comes back again and again.
Oh yeah.
Throughout the Marvel universe. It's a much disputed territory.
As Magneto is preparing to invade Santo Marco, Professor X confronts him on the astral plane. They basically meet in this virtual space and they argue with each other about how humans and mutants should get along or not. They have very different ideas about that.
You know, we've heard a little bit about from both of them and anyone who's seen movies of them conversing. This is where they're actually having that philosophical debate about whether mutants are superior and humans should be their slaves, which seems pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Or the mutants are superior, maybe, and they should help humans and just all get along.
They finish their argument, and then Mastermind creates an illusory army to conquer San Marco. And then as soon as the evil mutants take control of the island, Magneto somehow raises a real army of soldiers to help defend it. They just kind of mention that in passing. Like,
I forgot that was even a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like within a short time, Magneto seizes the reins of government and loses no time in forming a real army modeled after the imaginary one created by Mastermind.
Oh, I just figured he scared the real army into doing what he wanted.
But, yeah.
He went through all the correct channels.
But that sounds way more convoluted. Cool. Then Professor X and the X-Men head to Santo Marco to fight the Brotherhood, and the X-Men show up pretty strong. They prepare to assault the palace where the Brotherhood is holed up, but the palace door is booby trapped with a bomb.
Yes.
Professor X senses it with his X sense. I just made that up. And hurls himself at the door. So he senses it and just throws himself out of his chair, which was unexpected.
Yes.
He survives, but he's lost his telepathic powers and he lost them in the explosion. So he's basically been concussed or something. So he can't use his brain powers.
Right. Which is bad news, because in like 2/3 of all X-Men issues so far, Professor X just shows up at the end of them and like wipes someone's mind with his telepathic powers. And
right.
He can't fall back on that trick anymore. So.
Yeah, it is actually good they do this, because everyone, we've talked about this before. It's like, why does Professor X have X-Men? It's like they fly around for a few minutes and then he's like, stop, erase your memory, bye, supervillain. So it seems like useless to have them.
I think he might have wiped his own mind because he had seen Beast's feet one too many times. And every panel Beast is drawn, his feet are in the there's forced perspective and they're like huge.
They're huge
in front
yeah.
of him. It's gross.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of feet.
You hate feet way more than I do. You have an irrational hatred of feet. That's one of the only things I actually know about you.
Yeah, it's like the inverted Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
That's what we call the inverted Tarantino. Yeah, it's
syndrome.
I've never been that fond. And I've learned to, you know, get along with feet.
Mm-hmm.
But
you've evolved.
But Beast, I do like better as the furry blue Beast, because it covers those feet.
As the Frasier Beast?
Yeah. Frasier Beast.
Have you ever seen one of those hairless cats?
Yeah.
They have hair for a freaking reason.
Oh man.
There's a lot of good Cyclops stuff in here. His power shows up big. That's what I really mean. He's
slicing a cake.
Well, after he slices the cake, he slices like a castle. So
that is true. That's better.
The cake was just foreshadowing for the castle.
That's what that was.
Then he somehow like knocks some guys around without really messing them up.
Yeah, because it's a force beam. It's like they're still kind of like figuring out how this thing works exactly, but it's like it's not like a laser, it's not heat vision, it's like a impact thing. So Professor X throws himself at the door, blows himself up real good. Magneto and the Brotherhood flee. On the way out, proving that he's not a complete bad guy, Quicksilver, at the speed of Quicksilver, disarms a bomb that was meant to destroy all of Santo Marco and the X-Men. So he's not going to let innocent people get killed. He's not even going to let his enemies get killed. Then he heads
Wuss.
Away.
Yeah. The Brotherhood of Gray Area Mutants.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Brotherhood of Ambiguous Mutants.
Chaotic Neutral.
I just noticed too that in that explosion, the only thing you can see
is the foot. Yeah. Beast's feet.
Is Beast's feet.
Yeah.
It's really, it's in the first panel. There isn't probably 7 panels that go by before Beast's feet are front and center.
Yep.
Who is the artist on this one?
This is Kirby.
That's a Kirby, yeah.
God damn it. I feel like that was on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a funny, just to put a bow on this thing, there's a funny coincidence about this issue. So I think when we first talked about X-Men, when they first showed up, we talked about how there was always some controversy around was X-Men just a ripoff of DC's Doom Patrol, which had come out a few months previous. Well, here's another piece of evidence that adds fuel to that fire. So the same month that X-Men number 4 comes out, DC's Doom Patrol number 86 hit the stands. And on the cover of Doom Patrol 86, it features the first appearance of the Brotherhood of Evil. Not evil mutants, but very, very close. So yeah.
A spy.
The parallels. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like corporate espionage between DC and Marvel.
So that's X-Men number 4. Any final thoughts?
I really like the astral plane moment, because mm-hmm. that philosophical debate between Magneto and Professor X is what has always kept me interested in X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides, you know, like Wolverine.
Yeah.
So I was glad it appeared so early.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, we've talked about how, like, X-Men is how Stan is getting at talking about civil rights without actually talking about civil rights. So
yeah,
like, now, you know, we also know that Malcolm X is on the scene by this point. Martin Luther King is already an established leader in the Black community. So
they really are the representations of those philosophies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And literally depicted by white men.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah. Radical militant versus
peaceful coexistence.
Peaceful coexistence. Yeah. And that's only going to get more pronounced and more obvious as X-Men goes along. Especially once we start getting into, like, all of a sudden, like, in the not too distant future, the Marvel Universe, like, the civilians of the Marvel Universe just decide that mutants are to be feared and hated. Mm-hmm. And then that winds up being a really explicit parallel to, like, everything that's going on with race relations and the civil rights era. It's good. It's not subtle, but it's good.
Yeah.
So
it makes for good story.
It does. Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a little break. When we come back, we will talk about our final issue from this month. All right. Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. We got one issue left to talk about, and it's a big one. It's Avengers number 4. Captain America joins the Avengers, written by Stan Lee, with art by Jack Kirby, who co-created Captain America in 1941 with Joe Simon.
It's also noted that Stan wrote a Captain America script as one of his first, scripts.
The first script that Stan wrote ever in comics.
So they both have like a real attachment to this character.
Yes.
And also, and so do I. I mean,
he's great.
I had a hand-painted shield that I ran around with as a little kid all the time.
And I think, like, this issue is, I think it's a good issue, but, like, more importantly, it's like, once Captain America's in the Marvel Universe, it's like, now it feels like, okay, we've got our characters together. Like, we've got our cast of characters. Mm-hmm. He's really the last major, like, Silver Age superhero to show up in the Marvel Universe.
He's also like the moral compass. Like,
yeah,
even Spider-Man gets more morally dubious sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah. Just to, like, make ends meet or whatever. But Captain America, like everyone else, like Tony Stark's, you know, Tony Stark. Thor is a god and he does weird things.
Yeah.
Hulk, obviously not. He's very morally ambiguous.
Yes.
Giant Man is also Ant-Man and just, you know. He's Ant-Man. What are we gonna do? And then Wasp is just so man hungry.
So
having him just be like this clear-cut ideal,
mm-hmm.
having him join this really, I think, focuses it. It's like the center.
Yeah. And Cap is, he's one of my very favorite characters. He's a really easy character to write badly, but when someone's actually being really thoughtful about the character, I think you can tell some really good stories. And this issue, it picks up right where our last issue left off. So if you remember, Namor, the Submariner, and the Hulk teamed up to take on the Avengers. That didn't go great for them.
Hulk took off.
The Hulk had an anxiety attack and turned back into Bruce Banner. And then he ran off. And then Namor's like, what the hell? You left me holding the bag. And he takes off. And that's exactly where we come into the story. So smash cut to Namor fleeing the island, flying away from it where they were fighting on his tiny little ankle wings.
Yeah, in his very, very revealing costume that Noah was talking about, not necessarily the revealing part, but just but how lazy.
I just don't like a like
just
a,
briefs are as yeah, a costume.
They're like boxer briefs. That's his costume. I don't like superheroes that don't wear any clothes.
Does it make you feel things? What's the deal?
I don't know. It's like it's a shitty costume. I just think like that's, shorts. That's all you come up with. My wife won't let me go out front with my boxer shorts on.
Well, if you look it, like but... if you look like Namor, she might.
That's true. He has a weird shaped head though.
That's yeah. true. Yeah,
and I feel like I have a normal shaped head.
Yeah, dude, I think you have my a body handsomely is not shaped
as
head.
Normal as my head.
Yeah,
like 40 some odd years.
I do have wings on my ankles. I haven't really told anybody this before, yeah, but they don't do anything.
No. Yeah.
I feel like he should cover up those disgusting ankle wings.
It's going to slow him like, down.
You know, you have majestic wings. You know, like, that's one thing, but those things, superfluous wings.
Well, then he couldn't fly.
Can he fly? He's just diving into the water.
No,
right?
he can fly. He can.
Does he they're... fly like upside down? Like his feet up in the air?
I think he should. It would be more like the human top. What I always thought about when I was a kid, and I, because I guess I get into this sometimes, where like, don't those wings like bash into each other? The inner ones, like, wouldn't it be better to just have outer wings, like caps?
So he has two, a wing like, on every ankle, like four wings. Okay. I thought they were on the outside.
So the inner ones, I'm guessing, just smash into each other unless you hold your legs just right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm sure there's a learning curve.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't overthink Submariner's ankle wings.
Yeah.
I feel like you could go. It, with just a little bit of anesthesia, have those things just removed and be out and about your business same day.
Throw on a shirt, maybe. Yeah.
And just like cover up.
So the angry Submariner Namor, he flees the battle and he searches unsuccessfully for his people, the Atlanteans, who he still hasn't been able to find after the invasion of New York. Which was pretty cool in Fantastic Four. He interrupts an isolated tribe of Eskimos, in quotes.
Whoops.
Yep. who are worshiping a figure frozen inside a huge block of ice. Namor throws the ice block into the ocean because he's like, worship me. I'm right here. And I'm a, you know, prince of Atlantis.
Check out these tiny wings.
Yeah. Check out my pecs. The ice drifts into the Gulf Stream and starts to melt.
Yeah. And this is very fortunate timing because the Avengers happen to be heading back to New York in their undersea craft. They see this this figure floating in the water and they pull it into the boat and surprise, it's Captain America.
Yeah.
Cap wakes up. He freaks out. He fights the Avengers briefly until they can settle him back down. At first, they're not sure that he's the actual Captain America. But then he says, look, I'm going to tell you the story about how I wound up in this condition. I'm going to tell you what I remember. So Cap and his sidekick Bucky in World War II are chasing down an explosive-filled drone plane as it's taking off from a Nazi airfield. And so the two of them are racing toward it on a motorcycle. They leap off the motorcycle. Bucky makes it onto the plane. Cap doesn't quite make it on there, but it's a trap. Cap falls off. The bomb explodes, kills Bucky, and he stays dead for like 50 years. So that's pretty close to permanently dead.
And that's
the
last thing Cap sees before he's pretty much sinks to the bottom and is unconscious.
Yeah,
and
he turns with his shield, though. They recover him in that ice.
Oh, yeah. He had like army fatigues over his full costume with the shield on.
Yeah, he's a professional.
Yeah. The Avengers get back to New York.
Oh, yeah, this is awesome.
So this is so weird. So they get back to New York where a reporter, they basically stand there for some photos and they turn to stone in the flash. And it's apparently a reporter's camera flash transforms them into stone. No one seems to think that's that weird. They think maybe there's just statues there now and the Avengers left.
Yeah. It's
in classic comic format, they're like, oh, those jerks. They like try. They snuck away. Like,
in the middle of the flash.
No matter how heroic the superheroes are, if anything out of ordinary happens, everyone turns on them. The reporters are like, What does he say?
If you think he's just like celebrities, though.
That's a pretty crummy trick to pull on us after us waiting all day for this interview.
Yep.
So they're basically turned to pillars of salt. I mean, they're like right in front of everyone's eyes, they're turned into stone. And the first reaction of the reporters is like, those jerks. Like, they've never done anything like this before. It's not like they have a track record of a sneaking out of interviews.
Yep.
Right.
And in fact, if they're anything like the Fantastic Four, they'd be clamoring over each other to be like the front and center of the interview. Yeah.
They would be like, there's no way the Fantastic Four, although they have run away from crowds, like going for autographs. But that Time Magazine thing, they were all just trying to get in the front. Reed was a little modest.
Sad. Yeah.
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 So then, yeah, Cap comes crawling out of the submarine or whatever they're in way after everybody else. And then he's just like, oh, there's just some statues. Where did everybody go? There's just statues.
And those are really weirdly posed statues. Yeah.
They're statues posed in like a, they're in horror of something. You know, like, no, the, covering their eyes.
And, yeah, yeah. He says, those statues must be in honor of the Avengers.
But they are not sculpted in typical poses. Oh, well, it's, like, it's no concern of mine.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, yeah. Where did everybody go? I don't know.
And then he takes off and goes to a nearby hotel. And he's tracked down by Rick Jones, who bears an uncanny resemblance to Bucky. It gets kind of weird there, but.
Yeah, there's a little creepy vibe. Yeah.
It's like suddenly Cap's like, I'm fine because there's this my little buddy.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the expression on it that's drawn on his face is terrifying.
Bucky, it's you.
And that's two panels after that.
Oh, yeah.
You're like his twin brother. Your voice, your face, everything. You could be Bucky's double.
Yeah, he looks way smothering. Cap and Rick review some photos that the event of the Avengers talking to the reporters, and they finally realize someone shady was in the crowd. So
holding a gun.
Yeah. Like, there was not a camera. It was like a weird gun. So Rick calls the team brigade, the ham radio guys, and they all start looking for the suspicious cameraman. So That
it should
moves
be easy to
along.
Find
yeah.
a cameraman who uses a gun instead of a camera to take pictures, but
yeah. you know, you have to, like, people are taking pictures of suspicious people and then developing the film and then sending in the stuff, so it takes a while.
And so they find the suspicious photographer. Cap winds up busting into his hideout and beats him up along with a few other thugs who happen to be there.
He appears to be polishing his camera gun.
Yeah.
Handy.
Yeah.
And Captain America couldn't remember what he looked like. He had to carry the photo around with him.
Yes.
Holds it up next to someone, doesn't or does punch them. That's what he does.
Yeah. That's right.
and then we get our big reveal. It turns out this shifty cameraman was actually an alien whose ship crash landed in the ocean centuries ago.
I did not see it coming. I really didn't.
That actually.
Yeah, no, that was out of left field.
And the dude looks like broccoli.
Yes, yeah. he looks like he has a giant broccoli head, and he
looks stoned.
He looks like the flaming carrot a little
bit
too.
Yeah, like a really burned out flaming broccoli,
like Towley from South Park with the flaming carrot. Just
And apparently there is something about his giant broccoli head and the fact that, you know, he turned people to stone with his stone gun. That actually gave the ancient Greeks the idea for Medusa.
Yeah, because he's been around forever. Yeah, right. He crashed a long time ago.
Yeah. So Cap says, look, I will help you get back home to your home planet if you'll restore the Avengers. So he reverses the stone gun thing, turns them back into living human beings, and the Avengers head out to find the alien ship.
As they basically, Thor raises the ship using some weird magnetic power of his hammer.
Sure.
And the alien starts repairing it, but then they're interrupted by Namor, who has found some, like, elite Atlantean warriors who are willing to do what he says. Then Namor's forces take Rick Jones hostage, which makes Cap pretty mad.
Yeah.
This is his little buddy.
Right. Who he just met.
Yeah.
So yeah. But he's very, very bonded, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Really messed up.
he's really grooming this kid.
Yeah. He's already like, this is gonna be my new sidekick because he looks like my old one.
Yep.
Namor and his warriors are scared off by the launch of the alien ship, so everyone thinks it's like some kind of earthquake or volcanic eruption. So they take off. The ship comes up, then the Avengers invite Cap to join them, and he accepts. So they'd all apparently talked about this off camera,
right?
And Rick is torn between his new loyalty to Captain America and his old loyalty to the Hulk, which I like. The Hulk, without being there for the Hulk, is pretty scary because Rick is like the guy who talks Hulk down and gets him to turn back to Banner.
And he's the only one who could possibly be willing to take that much abuse.
Yeah.
So Rick is now he's basically caught between his abusive ex-partner and his way too clingy new partner.
Yeah, it's
like there's no good decision to make here, kid.
I don't know how that. Yeah, he just has a weird role, and it continues. He for his entire existence to have a weird role in the Marvel universe.
Yes, very much so.
But going from like the nostalgic Cap's dead sidekick thing, and to and being the Hulk's like. Total, like the Hulk has saved my life, so I owe him my life.
Kind of thing.
It's a weird role, and it improbable.
Yeah,
but of course.
And then somehow he also finds time to do all that ham radio stuff.
Yep. So
he's a multitasker.
That's his hobby.
He's got a teen brigade. Yeah, you missed all that in the interim between the last time you were on. Rick Jones has what he calls the teen brigade, where they across the country, all these ham radio enthusiast kids report things in so they can do things like find out where the Hulk is.
Cool hobby.
Yeah. At the time, it was super rad.
It's like it's before we had the internet, we had ham radios.
And so it wraps up with us worrying about what's going to happen with the Hulk.
Yeah. As the Avengers often are. So that's our comics for the month. Now only one thing remains, and that's to talk about what we thought were our panels of the month. So, Rob, you already mentioned what your panel was. So do you want to elaborate on that one?
Yeah. It's Journey into Mystery, number 102, page 7, panel 4. It's just the weird things that happen when Thor's in the 23rd century, but... As he's doing Zarko, the Tomorrow Man's bidding, they send out this security robot that is, for some reason, because Kirby was drawing it, based on an octopus. So this crazy robot octopus is like shoots out of a trap in the wall.
Yeah.
And it's huge.
Yeah.
And it's just this. I was going through the comic like, yeah, whatever. And suddenly it's just this big, like full width panel of Thor wrestling with this robot octopus.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just cleanly and coolly drawn. Just what I will continue to say, it's got the most Kirbiness. Kirbiness nice. Is my new thing. And it also reminded me of the robot squids from The Matrix. So there were these weird parallels where I'm like, I bet they read this.
Yeah.
I'm sure they read this at some point, but to lift some of these ideas from it, it looks a lot like those robots.
Yeah.
So it seemed like they may have been inspired by it, or just some Doom Patrol-like parallel.
Sure. Yeah. They were at least probably inspired by someone who was inspired by this along the way.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, my panel of the month, I already read it, but it's from Amazing Spider-Man number 10. Page 22, the last page of the comic, panel number 3, it's Jonah's confession. So when he is standing in his office all by himself and just admitting to himself that the reason that he hates Spider-Man so much is because he can never be half the hero that Spider-Man is. It's a really beautiful bit of Ditko light and shadow work where Jonah is framed by light coming in from a window. He's in shadow. He's kind of slumped. His shoulders are hunched. He's speaking truth to himself that he won't ever allow anyone else to hear. It's funny. Ever since I first read this, like 30 years ago, like I can see this panel, like it's something that just stood out. And it's, it is like a major moment in his character. It is also kind of funny though, like him just admitting the fact that he's kind of a piece of crap actually makes him less of a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Which I think
he still goes on to behave like a piece of crap.
Right.
Decades.
Yeah. But there's something about it. It's like, because this thing happened and it never really happens again. He never does this again, but like, because this happened, in the first year of the character's existence, everything that has come after, this is always kind of in the back of your head. It's like, well, but Jonah's also this guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it keeps him from being, you know, a straight up villain and more just like a frustrating and sometimes amusing supporting character.
Yeah. It actually, in recent comics, which I love to talk about too.
Yeah.
Jonah discovers who Spider-Man really is.
Oh.
And in doing that, he...
Who is Spider-Man?
It's a little guy named Peter Palmer.
Oh, okay.
I love that typo.
The typo, yeah.
But yeah, so he... And when he does, he ends up totally changing his opinion and starts to write articles about Spider-Man being a good guy and trying to help Peter and Spider-Man solve things. So we see this... That this moment seemed to resonate right across to now.
Oh,
to me,
wow. Nice.
Which was really cool. Yeah. Just to see that side of Jonah.
Yeah.
And he's still, you know, a bombastic, egotistical idiot.
Right. Right.
But it's nice to see him trying.
Yeah. Yeah. He does have another dimension there somewhere.
No, did you have anything that really stuck out for you?
There was a few. Well,
does it involve the Beast's feet or Namor's underpants?
The comic. So first of all, I didn't read the X-Men comic because I got confused easily. But I'll tell you, my favorite comics were all those like bonus comics, the extras that come at the end of the
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like Tales to Astonish or Strange Tales.
So. The one I love all the old DC horror comics.
Yeah.
And those are always super short, like little morality.
Yeah,
it's basically like this guy did something terrible, so now something real terrible is going to happen.
Yep. Yes.
Way worse than whatever the guy did.
Oh, the punishment just vastly.
Yeah, just last week we were reading the monster comics just for a special Halloween episode, and we read a couple of awesome things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are. I mean, most of them are pretty bad. But this one starts with the Wasp putting on makeup. The first panel, it's Hank saying, I thought we were going to the Veterans Hospital, Jan, to entertain the fellas with some fantasy tales. She says, I am Hank, but first I have to put on my face. I wouldn't want those handsome GIs, ex-GIs, to see me not looking my best. It's like, what the?
Yeah.
It's just like that last time I was talking to you guys, the back of one of those had a poster of the Invisible Woman.
Which she was half invisible.
She was fully invisible.
Oh,
which I thought was very,
the pinup wasn't invisible.
But but I have such a good imagination that it was very sexy.
Right.
And that, there also was another part in the, we didn't get to talk about the Fantastic Four, which I loved.
It's insane story.
Biggest bunch of idiots. Human Torch. Human Torch snubs all his friends who want to go bowling with him so that he can do like a bunch of stunts in his backyard. Looks like dodge a water cannon and stuff. Instead of hang out with his buddies, and they're super vain and they're bungling idiots. And they even do the same thing that the townsfolk do, or people in Manhattan. Where what's the stretchy guy's name?
Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah,
Reed. Yeah,
he's like, oh, hold on. I think I'm figuring this out. I'm on to something. You guys go and fight the villain. And they're, it's like the thing is like, you coward, you're not even going to come and fight with us.
Yeah.
And if they don't even give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
Only one person
they do it every time
for them.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like those guys are a dysfunctional crew.
Yeah.
Especially like the Avengers feel like a team of guys. Yeah. A team of people, you know, working together to, but the Fantastic Four is like,
that's really funny because the Avengers, until now, have always seemed like this disparate group that, and also we've had the Hulk. The Hulk has already joined and left in like two issues. And the Fantastic Four seem more like a team, and the Avengers were just like some coworkers. But now this issue of the Avengers seemed like they were fighting people in this coordinated manner, you know, they were understanding each other's abilities and playing to the strengths and weaknesses. And, but you're right. It's funny. Now the Fantastic Four just seems like a dysfunctional, dumb family.
Well, they're all in that fantastic car together.
trying to figure out who's
like,
driving.
Who's driving. Yeah. That's like, it's really absurd.
Some good gags.
We were talking about before this, but Like, I hate the Human Torch. I've decided that last time I was like, he's an idiot. But now he's actually a loathsome person to me. I hate that he runs out of his power.
He's a bragger. He's dumb. He can't plan.
He's a total douchebag. and not a good friend. He just doesn't seem like a guy you want to be around at all.
Nope.
And I forget what else I was going to say about those boners. But they put the Human Torch in an asbestos room and he found a way out.
Yep.
Very clever guy. But then the way he found a way out is to yell for help, essentially, out of the hole, and the rest of the Fantastic Four to come and save him.
Yeah. So, but for him to think to ask for help or to yell for help is saying something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Johnny Storm is just it's not a low bar. The brightest it's a low dude. Bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
My only regret is that we couldn't talk about that comic in greater detail because that comic has a ton of stupid shit that happens in it.
All right. Cool. Well, hey, we did another one of these.
Ta-da.
Nice job, everyone. Noah, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Noah is, he's maintained his position in the band with me.
Oh, congratulations.
In Devil Bots. And we are going to be playing December 6th at Dante's here in Portland.
Does this episode come out before December 6th?
Yeah, it'll come out next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
you guys are behind.
Yes. So we are playing together. He's doing a lot of writing. He's a great guitar player. And if you want to hear some metal-y rock stuff, opening, and we're opening for my friend Gretchen's band, that's Zeppelin, great Led Zeppelin tribute band. So come out. I think, you know, we never plug anything. So I thought I would plug it since Noah's here.
To plug, yeah.
You got anything else to plug? You got any cool Instagrams?
No.
All right, cool. We'll make sure to put a link to the tickets in the show notes,
please,
too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. December 6th at Dante's. See Devilbots and Zeppelin. While you're on the internet, hit us up at marvelbythemonth.com. Drop us an email at marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram at marvelbythemonth. And you can find us on other social medias as well by going to our website. And that's pretty much it. So for Marvel by the Month, I am Brian Stratton.
And I remain Rob Milne.
And I'm Noah Campbell.
All right. And we will see you next week for next month. We'll be right back.